The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. It's our post-game show celebrating a victory over Michigan State and possession of the old brass platoons. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. Our other host, TJ Inman, will be with us shortly to talk about Indiana's victory over Michigan State. Indiana won in overtime, 24-21. It wasn't the prettiest of games, but a win is a win. TJ, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks as always for listening, everybody. We appreciate it. And obviously today is going to be a fun show, a game that we are definitely happy to relive with all of you.
Yes, and just a programming note, Big Ten Network, I think, is replaying the game tomorrow at 10:30 in the morning. It's apparently an enhanced version of the game, so I don't know what that means, whether or not it would be like those old MTV pop-up videos, you know, where the facts will pop up. I'm probably dating myself, but with little tidbits popping up, so be on the lookout for that. Set your DVRs. But, you know, and I do want to give a shout-out to the people who stopped by the Hoosier Huddle tailgate and for to the Tonsoni family for help hosting it. It was a great time. The weather was perfect. It wasn't too hot. It wasn't too cold. A great time had by all, and topped it off with a win. So, you know, if they're going to win every time we throw a tailgate, we might have to do it every home game. So, you know, we enjoyed it, and thanks for coming out. But getting back to the game, I think, you know, everybody's talking about the importance or significance of this win. I, you know, was talking to Jeremy Gray after the game, who's, you know, an associate athletic director with IU, and I was talking to Matt Weaver as well from Pegues. And, you know, Matt and I agreed that this game, this win was a bigger win than the Missouri win a couple years ago. I think you agree as well, TJ, but the significance of beating a ranked Big Ten team, a team that had won the Big Ten the year before, had a 7-game winning streak in the series, and beating them at home in front of a pretty good crowd. It was there were a lot of empty seats, but the crowd that was there was loud. It did rain and sprinkle a little bit, so maybe that had people heading for the exits a little bit early. But, you know, it was a loud crowd being down on the field for that final drive and then overtime. So overall, I think it was a tremendous win for the program. We'll put a number exactly on it, you know, at the end of the season. If this is a win that propels them to 7-8 wins, and a better bowl game, maybe it goes down as one of the all-time best wins for IU. If this is just part of a win that, you know, maybe gets them to 5 wins and they bow out with 5 wins, then, you know, it kind of goes back to that Missouri win where it was a nice win, a good win, but they failed to follow it up. Now, I don't think going into next week, we'll get that. We'll get into that later in the week. But, you know, it's hard to follow up a victory against Michigan State by going to Columbus. But I think, you know, you're now going to come out of this stretch of Michigan State, Ohio State, and Nebraska at worst 3-3. The worst. And we said coming into this game after the Wake Forest loss that it'd be very dangerous for this team to be 2-4 after this 3-game stretch. So they're at worst going to be 3-3. You hope next week that they put on a good performance. Everybody's healthy after the Ohio State game and come home, take care of business against Nebraska, and then move into Northwestern and that softer part of the schedule there which does not include Michigan, which is also going to be a tough game. But, you know, games against Maryland, Rutgers, you know, Penn State doesn't look like world beaters. And then, of course, Purdue at the end. So, TJ, what did you take away from this game in terms of significance?
I mean, I think just the easiest comparison would be, you know, who's the better football program, Missouri or Michigan State? And I think Missouri's a good program, and they were a good program at the time IU beat them. They still are solid, but I don't think there's anyone that would tell you that the Missouri's a better football program than Michigan State. I think that's indisputable. Indiana beat one of the top, I don't know what number you rank Michigan State, but I think it's safe to say they're definitely one of the top 25 football programs in the country. They have one of the best coaches in the country. And, you know, Indiana beat them. And in addition, they did so without Dan Feeney. They did it without Demetri Camille. Did it without Simi Cobbs. You know, that's three of your best offensive players. Jacob Robinson didn't play, one of your better defensive linemen. So it really showed to me, number one, the program has improved just significantly during Kevin Wilson's tenure in terms of depth of talent on the roster. We talked about that, and I think it's kind of an obvious statement when you just look at the players that are starting, and you look at the players that are backups, and even, you know, the third string guys like Patrick Doherty that, you know, you don't expect to get any contribution from at the start of the season, but he's played a vital role at the Indiana defensive line. When he's forced to step up, he's been able to do so adequately, and better than that, really. So it was important because it showed the depth of the program, and it was important because in terms of the season, like you said, you're faced now with an opportunity. You stole one that people didn't think you'd get. So it really replaces that Wake Forest loss. I'd prefer it this way. If you're giving me a 3-1 start, I'll take a win over Michigan State and losing to Wake Forest over, you know, winning your non-conference games and losing to Michigan State. I'll take it this way, just in level of in terms of excitement that it created. You know, it came across on TV. It really did. It came across that, like you said, there were some empty seats, no doubt about that, but it came across as a pretty loud atmosphere, an intense atmosphere, and an excited atmosphere where people were genuinely, you know, invested in the game, having a great time. That came across, and it seemed like a really cool atmosphere on TV. It seemed like a game that belonged on primetime. When you were watching it, it didn't feel out of place like a game that was stuck there because they had nothing better to show on BTN. So that's important as well. There were a lot of recruits at the game. I have to imagine they enjoyed their experience, which is great for the future. And I think it really showed to the players that, you know, this program, we can talk about it. We can say we're getting better. We're improving. You know, the defense is really better. And, you know, you hear that over and over. And eventually you need a big win over one of these, I consider it a top three in the East, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Michigan. I think it was really important for Indiana to beat one of them. It's one thing to say over and over again, our guys believe they belong in the field with them. They believe they belong in the field with them. And it's one thing to say that, and it's one thing to get close to doing that. But it was really important for Indiana to break through, do more than just stay close, but to actually beat one of those marquee programs in the division.
Yeah, and as nice as it would have been to win in regulation with a fourth down stop on the goal line, unfortunately Chase Dutra fell down, and it's infuriating to watch. But, you know, it was...
That's all it was. He fell down. Yeah.
And, you know, you had...
He read it correctly, looked like.
Yeah, they had the play covered. He just fell down. You know, I didn't get a good look at it on replay. I don't know if he just slipped and Josiah Price helped him down, or if Josiah Price caused it. He just looked like he slipped on it was raining, and that new turf is slick in the water and in the rain.
Yeah.
So, you know, he slipped. It's unfortunate, but it happened. But I think, you know, there was so much pent up frustration, and I know there are people out there who probably did not like the field rush, but especially over the past few years, and the last couple decades, I think it was important for IU fans to celebrate with the team. This was a really big win, warranted of a field rush. The fans did not take down the goalposts. The security guards did to prevent them from getting taken down. But it was just, you know, it was all that frustration from losing two overtime games last year, losing at the goal line against Ohio State. And just, you know, it was like a cathartic event to be on the field there. But let's get into the game a little bit more in depth. There are some things that, you know, are a little troubling, and I'll start with Griffin Oakes. He's a guy who last year was the Big Ten kicker of the year. He's still terrific on kickoffs, but, you know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I think it's mental with him at this point. You know, last year he missed kicks in bunches. I think he missed a couple in the bowl game, and maybe that it's that bowl kick that's in his head. You know, maybe, you know, he can't get that out of his head. But you saw on that last kick, and he got bailed out the field goal before and overtime with a leaping penalty, but you saw him short leg it. And, you know, I was talking to Matt Weaver, who's a golfer, and, you know, kicking and golfing, golf swing are very similar in terms of timing and fundamentals. But he short legged it, and the two previous kicks, he hooked and it went wide. But I think he was trying to play it safe. The kick got tipped, apparently. I just thought it was a low kick and hitting a line drive. You know, I think you have to start worrying about where Griffin Oakes' head is at. You know, and I thought his celebration, it was warranted. But, man, going 1-for-3, I think instead of running down the field like you won the Super Bowl, you know, give your holder a hug and go get that trophy and thank the big guy upstairs that ball went through, because, you know, you miss it there and who knows what happens. But overall, you know, I think it's a fixable issue, hopefully, with Oakes. But it is concerning, especially with some of these red zone issues that Indiana has getting the ball into the end zone. But, you know, that we'll talk about that in a little. What did you take away from Griffin Oakes?
I think the celebration was quite a bit of relief mixed in with the joy. I'm not going to, like you said, you understand the celebration. We're not going to fault him for being happy and celebrating. They earned it. He's part of that. But I do think overall you've got to be concerned, and it has to kind of start to creep into the play callers and the decision makers, Kevin Wilson and Kevin Johns. It's got to kind of creep into their head. And now with, you know, what you do on third and fourth down in scoring opportunities, you know, do you start to maybe consider going for it a few more times on fourth down, where in previous, you know, efforts you would kick? The one that stands out for me that I don't think we'll see this again is Indiana returned a punt, Mitchell Page's 31-yard punt return that Indiana just decided to run it three times. They were in scoring zone right away on that punt return, thanks to a good play by the defense. And they ran it three times, and it ended up with a 4th-and-2, missed 40-yard field goal for Oakes. That's what I have on the play-by-play here. Right after that, Michigan State goes 8 plays for 77 yards and scores their second touchdown of the game to go up 14-0. At that point, I will admit to thinking the game was over. Indiana had blown a golden opportunity to score. They had great field position. I thought the play calling was incredibly conservative there, and they paid for it with the missed field goal. So do you start to think, well, you know, we're not comfortable anymore kicking from 40 yards. I don't think they're to that point yet, but, you know, a couple more games like this, and that's where we're going to be.
Yeah, and to me, it's he's not just, you know, the 50-yarder, it's 50 yards. You can understand
that. Yeah, that's understandable.
Yep. That's understandable. 40-yarders, he should be fairly automatic. It's these, you know, I think the overtime field goal was 33. He missed a short one against FIU. And it's, you know, you're right. It's sometimes it's, you know, we saw Wilson last year get play, his play calling and John's play calling got a little, you know, paranoid with the defense. And I think, you know, he mentioned it in the post game this week that he, you know, was calling plays, you know, a little close to the vest, that he trusted his defense to make the plays. And, you know, one of the notes I wrote down at the beginning of the game, I believe it was a 4th and 1 or 4th and 2 around midfield. And I thought Indiana would be aggressive and go for it instead of punting. They ended up punting, and, you know, it turned out I think that was I believe that was the play, the drive Michigan State scored a touchdown. Yeah, it was Indiana's first punt. They started at 13, and you know, whatever, it ends up under the touchdown, because that's what happens. You'd have a great kick, and that's what happens sometimes. But, you know, it's these shorter field goals, I think maybe with the Tyler Nitie pass, which I thought was not as horrible of a play call as everybody thought it was. Redding was open. I think, you know, Nitie just, you know, he was a quarterback in high school. He was a fairly good one. He has a decent arm. I just think he rushed it and threw it over Ian Thomas's head there.
Yeah.
But if he just waited a second, I think Redding would have been open for the score. And then, you know, it's a different story. But I think you're going to see them, you're right, TJ, in terms of, you know, those 45, 40-yard field goals, they might get a more aggressive offensively because you need points. You can't – I mean, Indiana had great field position all night. They started at their own – on average at their own 35 or 34-yard line. It was one of our stats or numbers that mattered. And I believe there were 5 trips inside of Michigan State territory that came away with nothing. So at some point, you're going to have to say, you know – we got to score a touchdown. We can't just kick and miss field goals. That to me, I think it's going to get a little bit more aggressive. People might complain about it, but you know, what can you do? Your kicker, I don't want to say has the yips, but that's what it seems like, is that he's gone off the rails in terms of consistency, and you can't really trust him. Whether, you know, that's going to get fixed, we'll see, but you know, you got to get points, especially at home against teams like Penn State, against Maryland, and Purdue. Is you just got to get points on the board and have something to show for the offense. Did you have a problem with the play calling? I know, you know, the first touchdown came on a throwback from Mitchell Page. I love the play call. It's something that, you know, I have one follower who tweets me that, you know, I can't wait for the IU program to be a program where we don't need those gimmick plays. But every program runs gimmick plays. That's going to happen. And at some point in time when you need a touchdown, you're going to have to run one of those plays. And they executed it well. Page threw a beautiful ball to Legault, who made an absolutely fabulous catch. They calmed the offense down, showed that they belonged. And, you know, they went on a 21-0 run or scored another 14 points after that one for a 21-0 run. And Legault looked really sharp. And people calling for Diamant or Peyton Ramsey, you guys got to calm down. You know, if people are saying Diamant has a better arm, it's a better passer. The kid's got moxie, and he has, you know, he has guts and all of that, and he could run the ball a little bit. But he's a career passer of 48% with 1 career touchdown and 4 career picks. So let's slow the roll on Xander Diamant. trust Legault. He made some big time throws, and throws that, you know, maybe Nate Sudfeld wouldn't have made. But he made some big time NFL throws. Even though he threw that first pick, the pick over Mitchell Page's head, that play was open. He just sailed it. It was not a good throw, but he came back, bounced back. He was 16 of 26, 276 yards, I believe, and he played a terrific game. So people need to stop it with the – we need to bench Legault every time he – oh, my God, he almost threw an interception. So they got to stop that.
Yeah, Legault was really good in that second half. In the first half, I don't think he was bad. You know, he made one poor throw. He overthrew Mitchell Page. That should have been a touchdown in the first half. He'd like to have that one back. But and then he forced one when he scrambled that could have been picked off. But, you know, it would have been a good interception if it would have been made. And you're going to have those plays happen. But overall, I thought Legault was really, really great in the second half. You know, it's interesting. Despite the Tyver O'Connor completion for 86 yards to Shelton, the average yard for completion for Michigan State was 12.5 compared to Indiana's 16.5 yards per completion. So, you know, what that tells you is, you know, Richard Legault is not dinking and dunking his way down the field. They're challenging him with their play calls. The routes that they're running are challenging for him to complete. They're not easy throws, and he's making them. I would like to continue to see and really see an increase in kind of the quick slants that they're running. I feel like that 10 to 15-yard slant route, particularly with Ricky Jones and then Nick Westbrook as well, I think we've seen a couple weeks in a row now that that has been a good route for Legault to hit. I think he throws a really good ball there. He leads his receiver well, hits him in stride, and it's a tough ball for the defense to play because he throws lasers, real strikes. And then I use receivers, Jones and Cobbs, or Jones and Westbrook, when they get the ball, you know, they're obviously doing well once they get into space. Another big day for Jones, for sure. So I'd like to see more of that, but for me, any talk about, you know, backup quarterback is a non-starter at this point. I think Legault has done more than enough to show he's the guy for this team. His teammates clearly have responded to him. You know, if any had a quarterback problem, they don't beat Michigan State. So I'm not saying that it was entirely Legault's doing that they did so, but I think in that second half he had his fair share of earning that victory.
Yeah, and I mean, you credit his receivers too, and the play calling. I think they're trying to figure out what he does well and what he can't do.
Sure.
Learning on the run. It's a guy who's only been here since January, hasn't had that much practice time, and you know it's a lot of learning on the fly. It's different than had a freshman on campus for a couple years and having him slowly learn the playbook. This is, you know, as we've seen, it's a
start. You know?
Yeah, it's as we've seen, this team is talented enough to beat some of the better teams in the Big Ten now, and they needed somebody to come in and take the reins, and Legault is that guy, and he is, you know, it's a trial by fire. He's learning as they go, and he's just going to get better. He learned from last week, and he'll learn again from this week, and I think that touchdown to Ricky Jones was the same play that he threw the interception on. You know, he threw a nice little pump fake in there with the shoulder, and Ricky Jones is wide open, just as Mitchell Page is wide open on that play. And, you know, this is the guy that's going to lead you to a second bowl game. And, you know, every time that something goes wrong, you know, you can't just pull the guy. And it's something, you know, we've talked about way too much. We've heard it after the first half at FIU. We heard it after Wake Forest, you know, and now at the first sign of trouble, you know, let's yank him against Michigan State. It's cool your jets, relax, enjoy the entire game, and get going, you know.
I've watched a lot of Big Ten football here so far this season, He's not the best quarterback in the conference. That's true. You know, he's not the best quarterback in the conference.
We'll see that guy this week.
Yeah, that's true. But I'll tell you what, I'll take our guy because I've seen what some of the alternatives are at other schools around the conference, and I think Legault's better than most. So I'm pleased with that position. I think he's going to continue to grow, like you said, and I don't, especially after, you know, a really good win, I don't think he should, his position or anybody else's is one that should come under any calls for criticism. So one thing that's encouraging for me, we talked about Indiana not doing all that well on third down. I think that improved quite a bit on Saturday night. Indiana goes 9 for 16, Michigan State only 4 for 15. You know, the yardage ends up being 438 to 437, so, you know, carbon copy right there. But Indiana was a little higher on yards per play. They're better on third down, and ultimately, you know, get the close win. But it was good to see the improvement on third down, and you know, we saw Tyler Natee get some run, and he had a couple of nice plays, particularly a 12-yard run called back due to holding penalty. He would have been over 50 yards. Devine Redding had himself probably his best day of the season, and I you know, it's good to see him perform really well and have a nice explosive play, which I thought was a really good play call. Have a nice explosive play against a good defense. That was nice to see, and I think we'll continue to see Tyler Natee and his role in this offense kind of evolve. And I think we're going to – I personally think he'll end up getting 10 to 15 carries a game if he stays healthy. And, I mean, the Michigan State defenders, he wasn't hurting guys.
You watched it on TV. It seemed to me that every time he ran the ball, somebody got hurt.
Right. Yeah,
and whether or not it was
quote-unquote
him
hurting guys, you know, they weren't injuries, but they were feeling it. You know, they felt it after they tackled him or after he lowered the boom and, you know, a couple other guys surrounded him and he eventually fell. You know, it wasn't a case of him really being the one that took the contact, it seemed like. And, you know, it's a punishing running style, but he's a big guy. You don't want to see him just constantly seeking out contact. I don't think that's what he's doing. I think it was he's got a place to go, and the defender's in the way, and, you know, he's got to go through you then. And, you know, he showed off some a couple of
he's
elusive
got some
moves.
In his arsenal. Yeah, definitely. I thought that
surprised. So that was great to see for Natee. And, you know, I think the running game was much better this week with the restructured offensive line than it was against Wake Forest, and that was encouraging. I know they didn't have, you know, a ton of, I think it was 4 yards per carry. Michigan State had not allowed higher than 3 yards per carry against anybody else. So that's good. I just felt like...
Yeah, 4 yards. And that's including a minus five team run, which I don't remember.
No, I don't either. I saw that in the box score. I'm not sure what that was referring to. But I don't know about you, but I felt like the running game was... particularly in the second half, I felt like it wasn't a waste of a play to run the ball, which against Wake Forest, that's what it felt like. You know, it felt like Indiana was really mostly getting positive things when they ran the ball, minus the early holding penalties. It seemed like it was a whole lot better, and that was a negative from the game, was the penalties in the first half, but you feel a lot better about it because they really cleaned that up in the second half and did a great job of not having any in the second half and overtime. So I thought the running game was much better. I think we'll continue to see it look pretty good. And I think Tyler Natee, do you think that 10 to 15 carries per game sounds, you know, roughly about right? It's going to differ game to game, but on average, do you think that's about kind of what we'll see with a kind of a goal line, red zone, and third down is kind of where they rely on him the most.
Yeah, you know, I thought he was a game changer. I think after he started pounding on the defensive line, it opened things up. And credit goes to the passing game as well. IU started to hit some long passes, and Michigan State had to respect it. And, you know, you saw the pass to Luke Timmin, who made an unbelievable catch. And now everybody knows his name. For those of you who, you know, we're saying Luke Timmin, we don't know his name. Well, you know it now. And then you had the long play to Ricky Jones. So I think that loosened up the defense a little bit, and it didn't hurt, you know, to have Tyler Nettie at 200. He's listed at 270. He's probably bigger than that. You know, being that bulldozer in the middle and wearing down that defensive line. I don't think Indiana ran as many plays as they usually do. I think they ran 67 plays. So if we're going to go, let's say they run their average of like 80 plays a game, I could see them running the ball 40 to 45 times. They ran 39, including that weird team rush. So 39, 40 times, with Redding getting the majority of it. I'd like to see Devontae Williams and Mike Majek get the ball more and Tyler Nettie get the ball more. And I think if you could get those guys maybe, you know, between 8 to 10 carries each and take a few ways, a few carries away from Devine, not because of a lack of production. He was very good Saturday night, but I think he needs his against a bigger line like Michigan State and, against Michigan and Ohio State, it's going to be a more of a collective effort. And I'd like to see some quicker guys like Williams and Majette and a few stronger guys like Nettie get the ball, wear it down, and then use Redding to find those holes, use his burst to hit the hole and run downfield. But I thought another underrated aspect of the game was the return game, and we talked about it a little bit with Mitchell Page's return. But I thought this is the first game where Indiana actually had a consistent kick return game. Michigan State kicker could not – I think Kevin Cronin could not reach the end zone, so they had a good good opportunity to return kicks. It looked like Williams was much more decisive and whether or not to return it. And maybe that's because he's fielding it at 2 or so instead of in the end zone where, you know, he hesitated for a second and then took it out. But, Devontae Williams had 3 returns for 90 yards, 30 yards return. Mm-hmm. And I thought that played a big, big role in terms of getting the good field position really making it easier for the offense to, you know, even when the offense didn't get, you know, into Michigan State territory, they were set up to flip the field. And, you know, I am starting to think that they figured out that return game.
We hope so. Yeah. I mean, he looked dangerous back there. He looked, seemed like he was, like you said, more decisive, kind of quicker to just get north and south as opposed to kind of zigzag a little bit. And that's good to see. I would not be surprised to see him break one at some point this year, and that'd be big because plays like that can certainly change the outcome of a game if the two teams are fairly close. I guess we should talk about the unit that kept Indiana in that game until the offense was able to break through, and that's the defense. I think it's very simplistic, but I do think it's correct to say there's no way that Indiana wins a game of that type last season or any time in recent memory. They just don't. There's no way that defense.
This reminded me of the Penn State game a couple years ago in 2014 when the defense held them to 13 points, and it was not the best Penn State team, but that Penn State defense is very good and is very similar to this year's Michigan State team in terms of that they're not the Michigan State of the last few years. They graduated a senior quarterback who's now in the NFL and all that. But, you know, to me, that it's a game that IU usually does not win. Where the offense struggles and struggles and struggles until the second half. And then, you know, I thought the defense played well. They should have had an interception on the first drive of the game. I told people this during the game. I'm just sick and tired of IU getting these bogus flags every time they make a play on defense. Like, it's shocking that IU made a play on defense. I thought that pick was – The receiver went into Tony Fields, and Fields made a great play on the ball and intercepted it. And, you know, they were like, I can't believe that. Let's throw a flag. So, you know, and to me, they bounced back really well. You know, it was just on that touchdown is a mismatch. RJ Shelton is not going to get guarded by Ben Bock. As nice of a player as Ben Bock has been this season, he's just not in the same class as RJ Shelton, who just ran by him. And then credit to Rashard Fant for chasing him down and nearly keeping him out of the end zone. To me, that defense played well. Tigre Scales has been terrific this year. He's had another career high with 14 tackles, 1.5 tackles for a loss. Marcus Oliver, who we haven't talked about a lot this year, and you know, he had a tremendous year last year, 112 tackles. He's just keeps on doing what Marcus Oliver does. He had 7 tackles, tackle for a loss, and a forced fumble, which was the 9th of his career at IU. It tied him for the school record, and I'm pretty sure that he will break that before his time is up in Bloomington. And then you have to, you know, give the defensive line credit. You know, TJ, they played a 3-man front a lot. They were missing Jacob Robinson, who Wilson said today was out with a concussion. So we'll see if he comes back. But they played a 3-man front due to that and just due to what Michigan State does on offense. So it's good to see the staff and Coach Allen's willing to adjust to the cards that they are dealt. And that's something that, you know, you've seen coordinators time and time again just be stubborn and not change. And it was good to see guys like Patrick Dougherty who have practiced and given their heart and soul to this program really come up with 2 big plays, the sack in overtime and a blocked field goal early in the game. You know, you saw Nate Hoff make a big, you know, he had 5 total tackles, and for a defensive tackle, that's great. And a big sack in overtime. And then I thought, you know, the guy you could get excited about in the secondary is A'shaun Riggins. A'shaun Riggins broke up 2 passes, had 5 tackles. And then I'd like to throw out Chris Covington's name, too. He won Special Teams Player of the Week this week for his coverage. And he, every time I looked up, he was flying to the ball when he was on the field and making somebody pay for their hit. So what else did you take away from the defense?
Covington is a guy that I had down as somebody I wanted to mention, and Kevin Wilson mentioned him this week and today, actually, in his press conference. He mentioned that Covington was playing with more confidence and linebacker, and that they're really pleased with that. And it shows on the field. I mean, he's doing a nice job getting more playing time than I think we expected coming into the year, and he's earned it. A'shaun Riggins is Indiana's 2nd-best corner right now, and that's great. You know, I think he's playing like a guy that will step in to be the #1 corner when Rashard Fant departs. So it's really encouraging to see that. Another player that – and the secondary as a whole, you know, you take away – that big play for Shelton and their 2nd longest passing play was 24 yards.
And I believe
really
that was
no
that,
other
that broken the play where Shelton held up in the in the backfield and things like that. But, you know, the secondary has bounced back time and time again this year. When they didn't make a play, they came back and made a play. And, you know, it's really, you know, now we could say that this defense has improved regardless of what they do at Ohio State. They've really recovered well. They've limited the big plays just, you know, one last week. And that was the first, I would say, really big play they've given up all year.
My one final name I wanted to point out on defense is that I know that Marcelino Ball gets lost occasionally out there. That's, you know, it's true. He gets lost. It kind of looks like pre-snap. He just doesn't quite get to the assignment in time, or, you know, we don't know exactly what's going on because we don't have communication with the play call, but he occasionally gets lost in coverage. But his presence on the field jumps off the screen. He makes plays. He is incredibly physical for a freshman and for a college football player just in general. He's the kind of secondary player that Indiana doesn't have very often. I mean, he looks like a different kind of player for Indiana's defense, and I think he's incredibly exciting to watch. I'm really excited to see this secondary, and the defense in general is young. You know, most of these guys are going to be back next year, and if they can continue to develop under Tom Allen, you know, they could go from being, oh, they've improved, to every week you're going to look at them getting better. Now, you know, this week, it's a tall task. Staff are probably not going to look better than they did this week. You know, that'd be stunning. But just in general, over the course of the season, I think you're really going to see this team, this unit, continue to gel and improve together. And it's really exciting to see, and it's something we're not used to, and I'm fired up about it.
Definitely. And, you know, youth is something to be fired up about too, but, you know, you got to look at these upperclassmen leaders like Oliver and Tigray Scales who are playing, you know, best ball of their career and helping along these young guys. So I do think that the future is bright for this defense, and, you know, they'll package this good feeling. Do what you can against Ohio State. We'll have that pregame show later on in the week. Do what you can. You know, you want to play well, but Ohio State, this might be Urban Meyer's best team he's had at Ohio State, and that speaks volumes, seeing that he's 54-4 there with a Big Ten title and a national title. This team, you know, beat Rutgers, who might be worse than Purdue, believe it or not.
No.
We'll see. Without
Rutgers has a defense. Not a great one,
true.
But it's better. I mean, goodness, Maryland, 400 yards rushing against Purdue, and I think Maryland's a lot better than we thought they'd be, but. I don't think Purdue has any pride left for Daryl Hazel. I think they're counting down the days till season's over and he's out the door. But that's a different podcast, I guess. But you're right about how good Ohio State appears.
Yeah,
to be.
I would just package up the good feelings.
Yeah,
you know, take what you can from the game. Go out. You have nothing to lose against Ohio State now that you beat Michigan State. You don't need – I mean, look, this program needs a win against Ohio State, but it's not – you're not in dire need for this win to go to a bowl game. It's a game where you're playing with nothing to lose. It's a game that the ESPN FPI has Indiana at, like, a 2% chance at winning. The spread is 32 points, so – yeah, it's the numbers. If you're a numbers guy, don't look at the numbers this week. it's depressing. But, you know, take what you can from this game. It's a big feather in the cap for Wilson and the program. Bottle it up. Give the Buckeyes a good game. Go out there. Wilson has had, you know, Urban Meyer's number. You know, so far in his career at IU, he hasn't won yet, but he's given IU a better chance of beating Ohio State in the last 5 or 6 years than anybody has had since Mallory. So, you know, this is a game where nothing to lose. You're going to see some gadget plays, open the playbook, put some things on tape, get everybody out of this game healthy. The last thing that you want is a repeat of last year where, you know, one blown tackle leads to Jordan Howard and Nate Sudfeld missing time. Who knows if they were healthy, you never know what happens in Happy Valley. And the worst thing that IU could do is have something happen to a major player like Richard Lego, like a Divine Redding or one of their receivers, or, you know, guys on defense like Fance or Marcus Oliver or Tigray Scales, where it might, you know, you lose the battle to win the war, so to speak. And this is a battle that's okay to lose as long as your guys get through healthy and can win the rest, you know, go and beat Nebraska, have enough guys on the field healthy enough to beat Nebraska. Go to Northwestern, who's a team I can't figure out. I mean, who knows? They lose to Illinois State. They're weird.
You know, can't find the offense, and then 38 against Iowa.
You have the rest of your schedule to navigate. So get out of Columbus healthy. Give a good effort. Show that you can back up that Michigan State win with your best effort and not just rest on the laurels. To me, that's what I'm looking at next week is can they back up the effort? And in terms of when they beat Missouri, they did not come out with their best effort against Maryland and lost. So come forth with your best effort. Get out of the game clean and get going for Nebraska. Play with nothing to lose. Play your hearts out, and maybe, just maybe, Saturday's day where IU gets all breaks and, you know, shocks the world. But we'll talk about more of that on Wednesday. TJ, any final thoughts?
Well, you know, I was texting with you and my dad. My dad, you know, one of the reasons, probably the main reason I'm an IU fan, texting with him, you know, during the game, and you know, we were stunned Indiana came back. Not that they were in the game against Michigan State. You know, I think we, you know, you called it. You called now. You went over Michigan State, and I expected it to be close. So that wasn't surprising that Indiana was in that game. It was, you know, a bit surprising how it unfolded with the defense keeping IU in the game. And, you know, if you tell me IU shut out at halftime, I'm thinking it's a blowout. But it was not surprising IU was in the game. But when Indiana let Michigan State, I don't think Indiana let them, but you know, Michigan State did their job to come back and score, tied at 21, and it goes to overtime. You know, I texted you and my dad that I've seen this movie before. I know how it ends. I don't like it. You texted back something like change the story or change the narrative, and you're right. That's exactly what they did. It went from we never win these kind of games to we just won that kind of game. And now you've got that in your head for the next time. The players have it in their head. The fans have it in their head. Now we can say we've done it. You know, the Indiana players can say we've done that kind of game. It's not talk anymore. They actually did it. So for me, that's incredibly important. As a fan, you know, and what I think going into a game or during a game is irrelevant to the outcome for sure. But I just think it's really great for the mindset of all of us that we can now say, you know, it's possible that this team can play that kind of a grinded out game and not just be competitive, but get the job done and come out on top. And you're going to have a lot more games like that. They won't play out exactly like that. But you're going to have a lot more games that are in that scenario where it's close and it's up to who makes plays at the end of the game. That's what's going to happen in the Big Ten and every major conference. And I think it's really important that Indiana was able to do it and know they can do it again. So it was great to watch. Great to see the joy on the players' faces as they were able to take back the old brass platoon. It was a great night. It really was.
Yeah, well, it was. You couldn't have drawn it up any better. I went home and watched the game on TV again afterwards. The field looks spectacular. It really looks like a different stadium. This is the reason why you have the chrome helmets. It's to play at night against big time teams and win. I think their biggest win in the chrome helmets. You know, since they've had them, you had a whole bunch of recruits in the stand. It was, aside from making that fourth down stop, it was a perfect end to a perfect college football Saturday in Bloomington. And hopefully, you know, there's more to come this fall and future falls, where this is how you start to build a culture. This is when kids go to class on Monday and talk about, hey, were you at the game Saturday? Did you rush the field? Did you celebrate with the players? Did you see Lego catch a pass? This is what gets the buzz going on campus. And so more of these games will build that culture. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for them this year. You have Nebraska coming in, who will be a top 15 team for homecoming.
Maybe.
Well, they have the week off this week, so there'll have to be a lot of shifting. But it's potential they could be a top 10 team and pull off the whole Alabama. You know, hope the loses, you got Penn.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.